And if I'm not mistaken, that ends Prahlad's prayers. The final verses are Lord Nrsingadev's response to his prayers, and then the chapter ends. So, 43 to 48. Kind of a mixture, is not exactly a theme. There's a carryover from the verses this morning, the prayers this morning of the uncontrolled senses, where Prahlad is, or was, characterizing himself as a fallen, filled with material desire, uncontrolled mind, uncontrolled senses, personality, become a self-controlled person. And now he's going to speak of, again, that this broad spectrum of materialistic civilization, a phrase that Prabhupada cited many times, Maya Sukhaya. You would just say that phrase and it's Sukha, a civilization of false happiness, Maya Sukhaya civilization. That's not civilization, it's animal life. A life of delusion. again, this is summary, so we will hear again his prayer for the well-being of all living entities. Again, we'll hear for the third time some statement about the non-difference of everything in connection to the personality of Godhead. As we heard earlier, you recall, that provides an impetus for the position of Dasya, staying always in the position of the servant of the Supreme Lord. He's anticipating, he has anticipated, and it'll happen. The Lord will ask him to take a benediction. We'll hear some more about that this evening, the final verses. He just wants Narada association, and he doesn't want a relation. He wants a relationship of servant and master and nothing else. And the servant and master relationship supported or sustained by the association of Narada and such persons as him. Like the earlier question, what's the mode of... It's just listen carefully, and the mode of his exhibition, appeal for devotional service, it's in every single verse. So, Maya Sukhaya civilization, seeing it, he was praying for his upliftment and everyone's upliftment. Now he's expressing his concern. Choche tato vimukha chetasa. He's simply concerned with love for the Maya Sukhaya civilization folks, which he considers himself to be one of. And he's appealing for mercy upon himself and everyone, this whole civilization. O best of the great personalities, I am not at all afraid of material existence, for wherever I stay, I am fully absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. Now, he's just a short while ago said, well, it's not possible for him to absorb himself this way because of the clutter of desires in his mind. Anyway, he's speaking a little differently now. He has this perfection of Vishnu Smarana. Vishnu Smarana is one of the nine stages of bhakti or processes of bhakti. Shravanam Kirtanam. Vishnu Smaranam. And with that Vishnu Smaranam, or Man-Mana, earlier discussion about the relation between the mind and the soul, it's where the mind goes is where the soul goes. If the mind is absorbed in, at the time of death, in something, that's where the mind, that's where the soul goes. And it's not only at the time of death, it's moment to moment. So, where the mind goes, directing the mind to the shelter of the personality of Godhead is the way of spiritual life. It carries the soul. There's not an option. The translation continues, my concern is only for the fools and rascals, is the harsh language. How you have concern for fools and rascals. He's more speaking about the position of lacking control of the mind and senses, or indulgence of the mind and senses in forbidden activity. That's doing that is the fool and rascal position. We're making elaborate plans for material happiness and maintaining their families, societies, and countries. I'm simply concerned with love for them. He's a transcendentalist that understands the false promise of happiness, so thus maya sukha, false happiness, in who we're not. The illusory conception of self. It's false happiness. And because of that false happiness and pursuit of false happiness, the self is lost. And relationship with Krishna is lost, and the real happiness is lost. So for him, it's very sad. So he has this sadness, shoche. Here's the position of one who has not taken shelter of Krishna, described in the purport. One is under the full control of the external energy conducted by the three modes of material nature. That's the position. Not like, hey, I've got a great idea. What's that? I'd like to be controlled by the three modes of nature. Okay, thank you. But that's what happens. You turn away from Krishna and we're controlled or we're controlled by the internal energy or the external energy. That's us. We're marginal energy. So one who doesn't take shelter has the external energy. And in that external energy position, Vimudha, in the verse of spoken by Prahlad, throughout the entire world, everyone is making big, big plans to adjust the miseries of the material world. And this is true at present, in the past, and in the future. Nevertheless, although they make elaborate political, social, and cultural plans, they have been described herein as vimudha. Strong language. Oh. Rascal. Maybe you've seen there's a little video of Prabhupada sitting in the garden in Los Angeles. On one side is his quarters, and then there's the temple, and the other side there's a garden. And because the climate in Southern California is very nice, Prabhupada liked to go sit in the garden, and that's instead of greeting guests in his quarters, he'd go outside and sit in the garden, sit in a nice chair. And so in one video, there's all these, looks like, you know, well-educated, well-dressed professors. And they loved Prabhupada. They had deep regard for him, and they loved Prabhupada. They didn't become sadhakas, but they had deep regard for his quality and the power of his Krishna consciousness. So one of them said, "Swamiji, you use such strong language. You call persons like us rascals and fools." And Prabhupada gave some answer like this. They gave some suggestion. Why don't you say that they're, you know, attracted by the illusory energy, and then something like that. And Prabhupada said, "Fool and rascal, that's the summation of being attracted by the illusory energy," and smiled and laughed, and they smiled and laughed. And so he's like jabbing them, and they're taking it. They just want him to like tone the language down a little bit, Swamiji. But in his books, and even in one-to-one conversations with such people who in this world are highly regarded, and they like being highly regarded, and Prabhupada is speaking of them as fools and rascals. And they're taking it, saying, you know, Swamiji, make the language softer. But that's the language of Prahlad, and it's the language of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. So that's how Prabhupada would justify it. I have to speak what Krishna says. Of course, he was discriminating with the audience. So this materialistic civilization, making adjustments with the miseries, Prabhupada speaks of striving to make a personal home. That's not very smart. And the result is we forget who we really are and what our natural position is, trying to make a place that's uncomfortable comfortable. And that's this Maya Sukhaya Bharam civilization. And in Bhagavad Gita, the same message is presented. This world, miseries, and ashashvatam. It's impermanent. It's temporary. We heard Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. Remember? 10th chapter Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada made reference that Arjuna said, Purusham Shashvatam Divyam. So, Ashashvatam is Dukkhaliyam Ashashvatam. It's temporary. And for the, like this image here, there's the, you know, nice mansion or palatial house, and through passage of time, it's all destroyed, whether it's by hurricane, tornado, or just time. It's time that destroys all things that are coming into being. They're also destroyed with time. That's the position of the non-devotee. Their happiness turns into distress. And it says, Tadvirya Gayam Mahamrita Magnachita. This is Prahlad speaking about, I'm happy wherever I am by staying absorbed in thoughts of your glories and activities. Again, previously he was saying, I can't do that because my mind is cluttered with material desire, but now it's in the different mood. My happiness, my contentment is just always thinking of you. So wherever I am, I can think of you. Well, what about when there's a position of distress? And he didn't stop thinking of the Supreme Lord because of the distress. I picked this image because I like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment specifically about being pushed off a cliff. Lord Vishnu caught him so he didn't smash in the jagged rocks below, but he didn't show himself right away. As Prahlad was falling and falling, he wanted to see what's he going to do. This is Vishwanath. Is he going to scream? Is he going to forget me? Is he going to remember me? Is he going to cry? But he didn't any of those things. And then, last minute, Lord Vishnu appeared and caught him. So he was protected and safe. But Prahlad knows the Lord will always protect me. And not like, because he'll always protect me, I'll never die. I'll never get old. I'll never get diseases. And I'll never be born again. In the case of Prahlad, he's praying to take me to you. It's Krishna consciousness. He's with the personality of Godhead. Again, by this Vishnu Smarana. Constant remembrance. That's the position of the devotee. Again, as I said, there's a kind of a mix of messages, not exactly a theme, summarizing all of his prayers in these concluding prayers. So this next one texts strongly against those that want their own. It's connected to wanting the well-being and deliverance of everyone. But he's speaking against those that are simply seeking for their own welfare in saintly life. There's the Sanskrit of the verse. There's Vimuksha eko na. So we know muksha. I don't want to be liberated alone. Na. I don't want that. Rather, he's concerned for the welfare of others. Runs off the screen somehow. I don't know why. Translation. My dear Lord Nrisingadev, I see that there are many saintly persons, indeed, but they're interested for the big cities and towns. They go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence, Monavrata. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, Vimimuksha Eko Na, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these mudhas, kripanas, fools and rascals. Their mental disposition, not who they are. They're objects of his affection. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of your lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to the shelter of your lotus feet. Now this phrase, Vimimuksha Eko Na, was used in a different way by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There's a whole lecture and some writings. The writings called Dushta Mana. Oh, wicked mind. Seeking adoration from the public by going to a secluded place, imitating the six Goswamis and simply engaged in solitary bhajan, thinking of sense gratification and honor and praise of others. Oh, wicked mind. So he instructed his followers to not do that. He instructed his followers to do as Mahaprabhu did. Go to the places where the public are and engage in Sankirtan and giving the message of Krishna consciousness. That's what his father did. That's, of course, there was a period in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life where he went into seclusion. Not imitating, but he had that qualification. Bhaktisiddhanta also exhibited that qualification. I'm sure most of you know. The history goes like this. When he was a Naishtika Brahmachari, never married, and young man, you know, brilliant young man, and when staying with his father in Puri, there was a Babaji, without mentioning his name, and the Babaji was deviating. He was a charismatic Babaji, had lots of followers, and he was deviating by making up a mantra and having his followers chant that mantra that had improper rasa within the mantra, conflict of rasa. But he was propagating it and propagating it instead of calling himself a follower of Mahaprabhu, not taking the Maha Mantra, which Mahaprabhu propagated. And then worse, like that's okay, but worse is his leading follower, he had dressed as a gopi, saying he's training him by dressing as a gopi to become a gopi. Saki Deki, it's called. So he was propagating both of these things. And Bhaktisiddhanta took him head on, locked horns and, you know, blasted him personally and publicly. And this man had a lot of followers. He was a popular, charismatic guy. And Bhaktisiddhanta was not foolish. He was fearless. And it was creating such an uproar that his father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, said, this could be very dangerous. So instead of your staying here, why don't you go to Mayapur and just chant Hare Krishna? So hearing that from his father, he went to Mayapur and chanted Hare Krishna. He took a vow that he would chant 3 billion names. And to do that vow, it took him 8-9 years, and he was chanting the same number of rounds as Haridas Thakur every day. He was qualified like Haridas Thakur, who is like out of sight already, qualified. It's inhuman. Think about it. 3 times 64 rounds a day. Maybe some of you, probably a number of you have on Krishna Janmashtami, or when we have japa retreats, chant 64 rounds. Try chanting 3 times 64 rounds. And then try doing that every day. And try doing that every day for 8-9 years. It's not human. It's superhuman. He's Superman or Super Bhakta. I mean, even doing the math besides the mind. A standard duration of 16 rounds, it can be more, it can be less, some more, but 2 hours for 16 rounds. So 16 rounds times 4 is 64 rounds, is 8 hours. Times 3, 24 hours. He obviously, to do this, he had to chant swifter than 2 hours for 16 rounds. And then to do it every day. So, how did he do it? He was superhuman. And after doing that, this 3 billion names, he, under the order of his spiritual master and his father, he accepted sannyas, left that Babaji, qualified Babaji position, Babaji meaning beyond the varnas and ashrams, and he entered into the ashram status of a sannyasi in order to preach. And he dedicated the rest of his life for that purpose under the order of his spiritual master and his father to do so. Both of them ordered him. So, although he was capable of solitary bhajan, he cautioned against it, more than cautioned, he sternly instructed not, because people who did so, it was imitation only, not qualification at all. And it was bringing disturbance to society, because being not qualified, yet getting some attention as if they were qualified, they misused it in the form of prideful activity. We'll discuss that principle a little bit further. Another nice example of this compassion for others is Vasudeva Dutta, not so much spoken of in Chaitanya Charitamrita, but when Lord Chaitanya spoke of Vasudeva Dutta in the language of Krishna Das Kaviraj, he would speak about him as if he had 10 mouths. Now, sometimes, meaning he couldn't stop talking about him. Now, sometimes he would speak as if he had 5 mouths or 3 mouths, but Vasudeva Dutta, the tally went up. He loved speaking about Vasudeva Dutta. So the narration in Chaitanya Charitamrita is that Vasudeva Dutta, one of the leading Vaishnavas in Mamgachi in Navadvip, he would come with the devotees every year to attend Rath Yatra, stay for the rainy season in Puri, and then go back. And when before going back, there would be some discussion. Lord Chaitanya would give some instructions to each of the devotees, in which they would sustain their lives for the next 8 months till the next rainy season came and the next Rath Yatra. So, Vasudeva Dutta made a request. Instead of asking for an instruction, he requested Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please deliver all living entities. My heart breaks to see the suffering of all the conditioned souls. Therefore, I request you to transfer the karma of their sinful lives upon my head. Let me suffer perpetually in hellish condition, accepting all the sinful reactions of all living entities. Please finish their diseased material life. If you think they're too sinful to deliver them all, transfer their sins to me. I'll take the sins, suffer, deliver them, please. And Lord Chaitanya then said on many occasions, I am Vasudeva Dutta's man. He has purchased me. I declare it again and again, I am his property. He can do with me whatever he likes. He can sell me in the marketplace for any price he likes. I am his property. I say it again and again. I am the property of Vasudeva Dutta. So, and again and again. So, Mahaprabhu was very pleased by that compassion. And another answer, there's no, because of your bhakti, there's no question of sinful activities coming to you. Please understand, because of your devotion, they're already delivered. Because of your devotion and your feelings of compassion for those who you're feeling compassion for, please understand, they're already delivered. Very wonderful. Now this para dukkha dukkhi position of Prahlad shared by other great Vaishnavas. This position of the devotee taking shelter of these mysterious lotus feet of the Lord and being in the mood of being the servant and the servant of the servant, many times removed servant, karmis and gyanis don't get it. Because karmis want to enjoy through fruitive activities and gyanis want to enjoy by speculative power to become one with the Supreme. So this mood of servant, of the servant, of the servant, of the Supreme Lord, it doesn't compute. Karmis are busy trying to be happy through material adjustment. And gyanis are trying to become happy by becoming one with the Supreme. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching is all of these desires, kami, makes the mind ashanta. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakali ashanta. The mind becomes disturbed. But for the devotee, nishkam, that's the position of shanta. Because a devotee of the Lord is desireless, he's peaceful. Fruitive workers desire material enjoyment. Jnanis desire liberation, and yogis desire material opulence. Therefore, they are all lusty and cannot be peaceful. The medium of bhakti, all of that becomes cleansed, and the devotee, the devotee, in course of time, loses such interest. He is not interested in so-called, this is Prabhupada's purport, meditation in the Himalayas, this nirjan bhajan, secluded spiritual practice. Rather, his interest is in the busiest part of the world, where he teaches people Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness movement was started for this purpose. This is Prabhupada violating what smarta followers of the Varnashram system say, that a sannyasi shouldn't cross the ocean. Why? Because on the other side of the ocean, there's polluted people. You associate with polluted people, you become polluted, so don't cross the ocean. It's just like a forbidden thing. Now, he not only crossed the ocean, but he traveled around the world so many times. And associating, as we see, like he's one of us, standing in line to board an airplane. But Prabhupada wasn't interested in nirjan bhajan. He encouraged establishing farm communities, but farm communities to give an example of people that wanted out of the bustling cities and simple living, high thinking. Here's Prabhupada's statement. Standing in line at an airport. I am not after respectful compliments by the public, but I am concerned more about my disciples. I want to see them quite able to preach this sublime doctrine of Krishna consciousness, and therefore I wish to stay. Otherwise, I'm not attracted for any place, either hell or heaven. Now, this is 1968, quite early in the Hare Krishna movement. Where would you like to stay? Any place? I want to extend to my disciples this Krishna conscious opportunity. And so one of those Krishna conscious opportunities away from the bustling city was in rural projects. But again, his statement at the purpose of ISKCON, number 6, was bring the members closer together for the purpose of teaching a simple and more natural way of life. Compassion in the city, compassion in the country, a life of compassion for living entities, and in particular, those who wanted to learn the way of spiritual life. Now, the next two verses, he's continuing, and I guess we'll call it a wrap-up, on the uncontrolled senses message that we heard earlier. From Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, we hear the senses are strong like serpents, but when engaged in the Lord's service, they become harmless, like serpents with broken fangs. The senses that are uncontrolled and the senses that are controlled. That's the topic, so I'm doing this little preview. A Bhagavad Gita painting that Prabhupada had the devotees create is the horses are like senses. There's this hierarchy. And it's backwards in material life. The senses are dictating, and the steering mechanism, the reins, are unable to control the senses, and therefore the intelligence, the driver, doesn't have control of the senses. And the poor passenger in the back, look at the fellow. Very fearful condition due to unbridled senses. So there's a teaching connected with this from the third chapter Bhagavad Gita. Famous verse, Indriyani Paranyahur. indriyebhya parakmanaha. So working senses, indriyas, are superior to prakriti. And mind is superior to the senses, intelligence is higher than the mind, and the soul is even higher than the intelligence. So the whole hierarchy here is the well-being of the soul and putting the soul as the director of the intelligence. That's when Krishna gives spiritual intelligence, then intelligence becomes the driver of the machine. And then the mind is like reins and the horses are like senses and everything's in proper order when there's the well-being of the soul. But these Maya Sukhaya civilization doesn't get it. They do it backwards. Prabhupada writes, this is now reference from the purport. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material mind, senses, and intelligence, O mighty Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So Prabhupada makes reference to this in the purport, therefore I am also. If the mind is unbridled, senses cannot be controlled. And so there's a remedy. And here's the remedy. Striving by right means. This upaya, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. For one whose mind is unbridled, self-realization is difficult work. It's a different chapter than chapter 3. But he whose mind is controlled and who strives by right means, appropriate means, is assured of success. Prahlad is speaking of this as well. The materialistic civilization gets it backwards. And the materialistic civilization is where sukha is maituna. It's sex enjoyment. So Prahlad says, little boy, sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedis, so-called grihastas who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. The kripanas, or fools, who are just the opposite of brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. Those who are dhira, however, who are sober and who tolerate this itching are not subjected to the sufferings of fools and rascals. I mean, he's giving us nice instructions about regulations of life, and even if the mind wants to go there because the desire is wanting the mind to go there, Prahlad's advocating, like if there's an itch, you don't scratch it. And if you scratch it, it doesn't make it better. It makes it worse. Prabhupada's purport. Materialists think that sexual indulgence is the greatest happiness in this material world, and therefore they make elaborate plans to satisfy their senses, especially the genitals. This is generally found everywhere, and specifically found in the Western world, but it's expanding, where there are regular arrangements to satisfy sex life in different ways. Actually, however, this has not made anyone happy, although it's promoted that way. Two, enjoy sex life is to suck one's own blood, meaning sex is the result of transformation of blood in the form of semen of man, and they're sucking their own blood. And there is not much more to be explained in this connection. The camel also sucked its own blood while chewing thorny twigs. The thorns the camel eats cut the tongue of the camel, and so blood begins to flow within the camel's mouth. The thorns, mixed with flesh blood, create a taste for the foolish camel, and so he enjoys the thorn-eating business with false pleasure. Now, I had the opportunity to watch this, the camel part. I was in Rajasthan and going for a walk, and there was a bunch of camels, and they, with their long necks, were eating thorns. You could see the blood dripping down the corner of their mouth, and exactly as is being described. Yummy. One of the references that Prabhupada would make in this connection regularly was Jivanacharya's verse. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in Him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. Prabhupada explains, Yamunacharya had formerly been a great king who enjoyed sexual happiness in various ways. But since he later engaged himself in the service of the Lord, he enjoyed spiritual bliss and hated to think of sex life. If sexual thoughts came to him, he would spit with disgust. So now, fanatical brahmacharis may go around spitting. And it's not advised that advanced devotees do that. It's to give us indication of the wariness of the allure of that as a source of pleasure and happiness in material life. So, text 46. We're almost completed. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is technical, there are 10 prescribed methods on the path to liberation. Monavrata. To observe vows. To amass all kinds of Vedic knowledge. To undergo austerities. To study the Vedas. To execute the duties of Varnashram. To explain the Shastras. To stay in a solitary place. To chant mantras silently. And to be absorbed in trance. These different methods for liberation are generally only a professional practice and a means of livelihood for those who have not conquered their senses. Because such persons are falsely proud, these procedures may not be successful. Interesting. This is Prahlad Maharaj, and in his own way, Srila Prabhupada would, but those who are not qualified to control their senses, having a make show of controlling the senses for attracting followers and profit adoration distinction instead of the real purpose, the real purpose of liberation. And we've heard 6 times already, the real liberation is not just neutrality towards spiritual activities of the soul in his spiritual form in relation to the Supreme Soul. These other processes are inadequate. However, in circles, particularly in India, but now moving outside of India, there's different techniques. Not exactly this one, but more like this one and this one. And observe. However, what we hear from Prahlad, I underlined it, highlighted it, there's a tendency that such persons who are practicing these things, they're interested in attracting attention to themselves rather than liberation. So it's pride is the result. So there's beneficial activities or, and when that piety is joined with a lack of controlled senses, this is Prahlad's way, or a heart that's impure, then I become at the center. And pride is the result. And pride blurs one's vision of seeing Krishna. You can't see properly. It's just the default. So here's a graphic to show limited and insentient living entities may engage in, like this, meditation on a candle or meditation in some other way. However, the descending mercy is different. It's unlimited. This one. And the devotee that's engaged in chanting, they're not just doing the behavior of chanting, they're calling for mercy from the Supreme Lord in the form of His name, and or in the deity form, and or in the scriptural sound vibration, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita form, calling for descending mercy. And that descending mercy is unlimited. And there's a relationship, reciprocal relationship between the chanter and the name, or the person, or the devotee worshipping the deity and the person, or the person engaged in devotional service, like Prahlad is requesting, and the receiver of that devotional service, ultimately, the personality of Godhead. So, Prabhupada writes, the real purpose of human life is to attain liberation from material entanglement. And as mentioned, these 10 if the senses are not controlled, it simply makes one proud and one isn't going to be successful towards the end of liberation. Rather, only a rare person who has adopted complete, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions, cleanse the mind, with no possibility that they will revive. There's different activities of austerity. This is Sorabhi Muni. This is Ranyakashipu. And so forth. And engaging in austerities that parch the elements of the body, according to Bhagavad Gita, that's austerity in the mode of ignorance. And that's not going to lead one to elevation to transcendence or liberation. Rather, the devotee can achieve this simply by devotional service, like chanting, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. This is paraphrasing a verse from Canto 6. I'm trying to finish up quickly so that you don't lose your patience or fall asleep or something. There's a lot of... this is a summary review. These are not new points, so I'm purposely going quickly. The advocacy of Prabhupada in the purport is this one. Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana. The same as reference of this, the previous, this one. Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana Agham Dunvanti Karjaniya Niharam Eva Bhaskaram. That's this verse that I just recited. So instead of this one, it's Kevala Bhakti is preferred. So Prabhupada writes, if one simply engages in devotional service to the Lord, all these 10 methods are automatically observed. You have $1,000,000, you have $10 and $100. That's an easy one to understand. So if you have that which is the conclusion of all these other things, then you have with the other things the benefits that can be bestowed by them. The indication in the purport is Prahlad Maharaj is citing these that for those that don't have control of the senses, that may be helpful if they're like, I don't want to serve Krishna. Give me something else. I'm proud. I don't want to be a servant of anybody. Okay, you can do these austerities and these other things. As for the Ajitendriya folks, but for the devotees, this, it's a subset, it's included. Sarvopadi Vinir Muktam Tat Paratvena Nirvalam. Devotional service enables one by the very nature of devotional service, you extend your senses where it's for Krishna service, and you don't extend your senses where it's not for Krishna service. End of story. It's Krishna's, the senses are controlled. And the mind that's fixed upon the purpose of serving Krishna, the mind is controlled. Bhakti takes care of it. And the converse is, you do the other ones without bhakti or service of Krishna, and it's incomplete and temporary. We're almost done for this session and his prayers. So the next 47 of 48, Krishna is the cause of material causes and effects. We know this teaching from Brahma Samhita, the first verse, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna is the cause of all material causes and effects. So in this world, technology or engineering or computer IT or what, cause and effect. You wiggle this over here and something over there wiggles. Oh, cause and effect. I got a PhD, now I got a job. Cause and effect. But what's the cause of those causes that make the effects? Nobody knows. No empiric science for that one. But Prahlad Maharaj can disclose, and he does. Here's the verse. By authorized Vedic knowledge, one can see that the forms of cause and effect in the cosmic manifestation belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the cosmic manifestation is His energy. This is this non-difference message once again. So here's the image. Both the cause and effect are nothing but energies of Krishna. So here's examples. We heard the example of the cotton is the cause of the thread, and the thread is the cause of the cloth, but you don't see the cotton in the thread, and you don't see the thread in the cloth. You just see the cloth. But where did the cotton come from? And all the other examples. Cause and effect. And then there is prasadam. Hopefully it's prasadam. Or this example is commonly given by Srila Prabhupada. There's the water, which is one of Krishna's energies, and then the sun evaporates the water, the forms of a cloud, and then it comes down in the form of distilled rain, distilled water. But it's just energies being transformed under the direction of Krishna, who the energies come from. Maya Jakshena Prakriti. And whatever there is, He is the cause of all causes. Therefore, that's a sign we're ending. Wrap up. Therefore, O my Lord, just as a wise man, by considering cause and effect, can see how fire pervades wood, those engaged in devotional service can understand how you are both the cause and the effect. Got it? You want an explanation? There's a table. And within the table, there's stored fire. How'd the stored fire get there? Well, by photosynthesis. It's the sun's energy, its fire, transmitted through sun rays, was captured by the leaf of a plant or tree. Now it's stored in but there's fire here. So where did the sun come from? Where this whole setup come from? He's the cause of the causes, and he's therefore also the cause of the effects of those causes. And then similarly, last verse for this morning, the Abhideya feature is again spoken of. So he's facing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Srinadeva. In this case, he's in his lap. But he's facing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, offering prayers, saying, "Oh, Supreme Lord, you are actually everything. You are the air, the earth, fire, sky, and water. Indeed, you are everything, subtle and gross." So that sounds like pantheism. God is nature. There are some people that hold that view. God is nature. And then bump it up a little bit, and then there's the controllers of nature, and then pantheists are demigod worshippers. That's another interpretation of pantheism or polytheism. God is nature, controllers of nature. There's many gods. 1, 2, 3. So this Abheda says, no, these elements and the controllers of those elements are manifestations of the source of everything. Prahlad understands it. You are the objects of sense perception, the life airs, the five senses, the mind, consciousness, and false ego. No, they're representations of him in the sense that they are his energies, not that they are the energetic, because energy and energetic are different. That's the difference feature. The non-difference feature is indicated by Prahlad. The material elements and anything expressed either by words or by the mind is nothing but you. End of this section. I am your devotee, and I know why I'm your devotee, and it's not some sentiment. It's with full knowledge, as we said at the very beginning. He was infused with Brahmagyan, spiritual knowledge, and spiritual knowledge includes knowledge of matter, because matter is resting on spirit, and spirit is resting on Krishna, and he knows Krishna because he's a devotee. So he has all of this at his disposal, and he's not bragging about it, he's offering very humble prayers. All of these prayers are meant for our benefit to nourish bhakti. Who is this Lord that we're worshipping? As Prabhupada would say, in different religions they say God is great, but how great they is, how great he is, they do not know. And so reciting his greatnesses helps us repose our acceptance of him as God, and therefore we should worship him. God is great, therefore I should worship him. God is great. Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said, is very simple. God is very great, I am very tiny, therefore I should serve him. That is Krishna consciousness. So now, Sambandhagyan is understanding the greatnesses and the connection of all things with him. How great is he? It's like that little saying, the young boy or the young girl takes a daisy and they pull the leaves off the daisy, saying, and let me count the ways in which I love you. I love you this way, and I love you that way, and I love you this way, and I love you that way, and I love you. So that's what Prahlad is doing. His love is unlimited, and it's not mindless, not mere sentiment. There's transcendental knowledge connected with his love. Now he's a Vaikuntha resident. Distinct from the Vaikuntha residents, of course, are the materialists, and on the other side are the residents of Goloka. And they don't require knowing that Krishna is God and how great he is. They just love him. And when he does something that's very wonderful, it's, oh, how wonderful is Krishna. Prabhupada said when the cowherd boys would come home after being with Krishna all day, the parents of the boys would be eager, what did he do today? And they recite what Krishna did today. And they think, oh, how wonderful is Krishna. Whenever he did, it was wonderful because he's Krishna. And it's not, the conclusion is he must be God. Because all these wonderful things, they just, oh, how wonderful is Krishna. Just nourish their love for him. So this is also meant to nourish one's love for him. And although the mood is a Vaikuntha mood, it leads to real shelter in one who is worthy of our shelter. I mean, he's worthy of our trust and our confidence and our shelter because he has all these things. And conversely, there isn't something that's apart from him. We should take shelter there. It's inspiration for bhakti. With you know, our eyes open, with knowledge. But who is this person we're taking shelter of? And probably most of you, almost all of you, maybe all of you, won't be here for this evening. You have to go back to where you came from, unless you're the locals, and the locals are in the kitchen. So, many. A happy journey back, and the final session will be available, I'm sure, recorded. And those who registered will get these images and the messages. And you can review it if you like. If there's some, particularly if there's some section that really struck you, we can go over it again. You know, the take-home inspiration. Because as it's at the starting point, these prayers of Prahlad are very famous in the various sections of Srimad Bhagavatam because of Prahlad's exalted position. After all, he achieved perfection by constant remembrance, just like Arjuna in the 10th chapter asks Krishna, can you describe the ways in which I can always think of you? So these are ways that can help us always think of Krishna. And in particular, Lord Nrisimhadev, so that we can always feel protected and be fearless. Not foolish, but fearless. We don't take unnecessary risks because Krishna is going to protect us. I'm his devotee. We don't act foolishly, but we can act in service to him fearlessly beyond the bodily conception of life, beyond the material conception of who he is, having a clear conception of who he is and his merciful nature, particularly for his devotee or felt particularly by his devotee. Naturally so, he extends himself that way. So it's wonderful picture of the spiritual world, and we're being, come on home, back to Godhead. Okay, so any discussion? We have the microphone. Look at that. There's one right over here. Lights?
Thank you, Guru Maharaj, for giving us your valuable association during the weekend. You showed one slide where the living entity was ascribed to have the two qualities, limited and insentient, and the Supreme Lord had two qualities, unlimited and reciprocal. I didn't follow why the living entity is referred to as insentient.
The benefit that can be bestowed, I'm not sure what you're, I recall the slide, but I don't exactly understand your question. If benefit is given to the body, then it's not going to benefit the transcendental soul. That's at least my understanding of what the message is.
Okay.
I'm looking at a candle to control my mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the context of it.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have two questions. Well, a question and a comment. The question was from earlier. I was just out of curiosity, how big are demigods and demons in terms of size?
How big in size are they?
Yeah.
Wow, I never heard that question before.
Really? Well, because I've studied, you know, before, like the Book of Enoch, and they talk about the Nephilim, the fallen angels, right? The hybrid of angel and human and women, and these people, right, like of Goliath blood being like 20 stories high. So I just wanted to have an image of how big these demigods and demons are.
I've never heard the question, and I don't know anything to give an answer.
Okay. My comment was about pride. When looking at these pictures, I saw myself before Krishna conscious and also during, but you know, like this pride of feeling like I'm exalted, I'm different, you know, I'm this and I'm that. Or, but then even in Krishna consciousness, I see it so much in the services. People restrict themselves of connections because of scare of pollution, or like we're an exalted group and we're different. We don't allow specific people into our, you know. And I just don't know how we will be able to overcome pride if this is super prevalent in our atmospheres.
Well, three things. One, carrying over residual tendency from the past is to be expected. Doesn't go away right away. Residual tendency. Two, in the beginning, Prabhupada gives this example. When you're planting a small tree, you put a fence around it because you don't want critters to come and or a plant or something and chew it up and it's dead. So you put a little fence around it. And then after it gets mature, you don't need the fence anymore. So similarly, in the beginning, there may be some necessary, because it's the beginning stage, some distancing. It's a little artificial, but maybe necessary. And then in the mature stage, it's no longer necessary. That you know, a rodent isn't going to come and eat up a tree, but a little seedling, they can easily chew it up and it's gone.
Well, it can just be a bit difficult to have peer-in-peer relations. It's easier for me to have a senior relations or peer devotee relations because those people are above that point. But peer-to-peer, they have high fences up. And I'm not trying to get through.
It's
just difficult in terms of like
not,
cultivating
It's not what's enjoined by scripture. It falls in the category of residual tendency.
Right.
I mean, you know, some people go the other way and they're just, you know, hypersocial.
Right.
And some people go the other way and they're very private.
Right.
We just have different natures and some people are scared. And so they're like, even with peers, I'm going to be careful because I'm scared. I don't want that material stuff that happened when I had friends. It was, you know, it wasn't really friends. It was exploitation, mutual. And largely, I'm, you know, thinking myself the victim of that. But, you know, we're also participants in being perpetrators of taking
so
advantage.
So I should respect people's fences.
Yeah, so the solution is mature in Krishna consciousness, and then one can be appropriately respectful to all living entities. That's the solution. Till you get maturity, there's going to be immaturity. And seeing immaturity, it's not lovely. It's immature. And, you know, it's, hey, you know, what's going on? Well, it's not mature. Paramarupa, this, whoops. Where'd it go? This insentient thing? What happened? Oh, I know. That's the next section. We'll get there. There we are. So, with Krishna, there's reciprocation. With the candle, there's no reciprocation because there's not a sentient being on the other end. In the back, I see two hands.
Maharaj, on the journey to pure devotional service or journey in pure devotional service, I find myself getting very uncomfortable at the place where I am, and I kind of maybe I'm impatient or fruitive in reaching the goal, you know, early, quickly. And sometimes I hear comments from other, you know, devotee friends saying, well, we can relish the place we are at. The journey itself is sweet. And so I was just wanting to hear more about how do we treat the stage we are in, like my stage is this impurity and some desire.
We had a whole Gita Nagari theme, acceptance and progress. Go back and listen to those. It's like, you know, abundant response to that question. But self-honesty is a starting point, not, you know, the low self-esteem beratement thing, and not the inflated perception of where I am. But just an honest, you know, that's an exercise in itself, getting an honest assessment. We heard some questions about how do we do that honest assessment part. But that's required. Be honest with what our position is and consider progress. It's a doable step of progress for me with the resources, with my degree of conditioning in different areas and make progress. Steps. Listen to, you know, that's a summation of the whole weekend of discussion on that theme. Different speakers from different perspectives on that theme.
Guru Maharaj, my question is from yesterday's class about the point of this Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva and this point about the cause and effect that Prahlad Maharaj is speaking about. Mm. So one of my understanding is that this point about surrender to Krishna, that exclusive surrender is all inclusive.
Yes.
And then in that all-inclusiveness comes my relationship with the material energy or things around me.
Yes.
And if I have attitudes toward material energy,
yes,
I cannot come out of material energy with attitudes.
Right.
So, like, one of the attitude I was reflecting was this attitude of victim or this mentality of as if the victim mentality, as if the suffering is caused to me by something outside of me. Or, you know, there's someone else responsible for my suffering.
Well, when I'm hearing your question, I'm hearing what I thought an earlier question was, is, you know, the inimical or negative or fearful attitude towards things. I keep a distance. But I keep a distance because desire, the tendency to be involved in those things in a way that's toxic or detrimental to me and the atmosphere around me, the people around me and the energy around me is not wholesome. So in the beginning, some extra precaution. That's not mature. So now I'm doing that or I need to do that because I'm just, but in, so maturing means in course of time, I'm not like putting myself in a in a race or something. But I know that the time will come where those same precautions are not needed, where I can be in a place where there's sense gratification around me, even the you know, my can remain undisturbed. Or praise, and I can remain undisturbed. Or dishonor, and I can remain undisturbed. But it begins, so it's like an incubation chamber is needed initially. The womb of the mother is needed before the child is born, and then the attention and affection of the mother is needed before the child can start becoming a little independent. And it, you know, so there's a natural growth, and we do it in steps. Is that?
I can say specifically what I was connecting this with. So like Prahlad Maharaj is not feeling, there is no sense of being victimized by his father of whatever he did. And there was like from a material perspective, we can say no one can be as abusive as that to a child. Now, when I look back in my relationship with my parents, you know, there is no sense of abusiveness, but yet this sense of like, I still carry resentment, or I'm still carrying expectations. And in that expectations, I'm not really in a service mood. So that's where I was connecting.
So, what to do? You know, it's similar question, but primarily it's bhakti, and knowing that bhakti will take me to the place where expectations will reduce, and forgiveness will be there instead of resentment. But if I just work on the resentment, you know, overcoming the resentment and diminishing my expectations, it's not sustainable. The mind will go back. Even I may go up, the mind will go back. Bhakti is needed. It doesn't mean don't do those other things, but bhakti is first. And then whatever becomes more sustainable. The cleansing of the mind is needed. And the modes of nature influence is needed. Otherwise it will go back. And, you know, and then not only in this lifetime, but then another lifetime. And then another, you know, it just keeps going. So we need a solution. The problem is we're controlled by the material nature. And then even the configuration may change. We're still controlled by material nature. Come over that problem and here comes another one. Because the problem is involvement with material nature in the mood of being the enjoyer of it instead of being the servant of Krishna, who's the enjoyer of it. And we have the right attitude toward Krishna, the alignment of the material energy is more conducive. Even there may be, you know, ill fortune. At least apparently. Are we done? Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.